Hey, good morning, everybody. A little more Beach Boys for you. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and we are so glad that you're with us as the Beach Boys croon in the background. Hey, in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with John Studebaker. He is a libertarian who is running for the state legislature here in Florida, actually District 67, South Pinellas, North Manatee County. So stick around for that. I think you're going to find him a person of interest. And the cap is back on that leaking oil pipe in the Gulf. But when is this doggone oil spill going to end? Well, we'll talk a little bit about that. And Republicans are warning that President Obama is planning to give amnesty to millions of illegal immigrants. What is up with that? Is that true? We're going to take a look at it. And you remember Robert Bork, the guy that never got selected to the Supreme Court back during the Nixon administration? Well, he says Elena Kagan is just too immature and inexperienced to be a Supreme Court judge. So we'll examine that as well. Meantime, this is Tampa Bay's only ongoing libertarian radio program, Freedom Works. We are here to talk with you about the crazed concept, I guess some people think, of less federal government, not more, less federal government, but more importantly for you, more personal freedom, more personal responsibility, more control over your own life. That's what we are all about, and we are so glad you're with us. We are here every day, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, except Wednesday. We're not on Wednesday, but 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Network, also available worldwide from our website, TheFreedomWorks.com, TheFreedomWorks.com. Please go and take a look at it if you would. Find out more about us, our program, contribute to the support of the show if you are so inclined. Find out if you might have a libertarian bent. You can take a short quiz and find that out. Listen to past programs that we've done. Also, if you would like to call us during the course of the show, you can do so. We have a toll-free number. It is 866-826-1340, 866-826-1340. And if you want to email us, you can do that too. FreedomWorksEmail@yahoo.com. FreedomWorksEmail@yahoo.com. We are technologically in the 21st century now. And we also talk, walk, and do all the other good things that we could also have done, I guess, in the 20th century. So we do all of those things, and we have Lee Clark standing by, ready to take your calls. Anyway, there's a lot going on today. Since we did our last program Tuesday, they fired the guy that is running the Afghan war, much to my chagrin, but not surprise. So the question is the departure of Stanley McChrystal a good thing for the administration and for the troops in Afghanistan and for the course of the war? Well, apparently, there's never a good time, right, to fire a guy that's running things over there. But McChrystal was summoned to the White House, as you know, and basically he submitted his resignation, and it was accepted. And now General Petraeus, who has been, by the way, down here in the Tampa, in that place just south, MacDill Air Force Base. He's been there all this time. He's now going to have to get back on a plane and fly now to Afghanistan. I'm not sure that I envy that. I think I'd rather stay here at MacDill Air Force Base if I had the choice. But these next few months, they are saying, in Afghanistan are crucial and may well determine the course of the war and its success or failure. And apparently General McChrystal, on his way out, had put in place what most analysts consider the most comprehensive plan of coordinated military action and economic development in 8 years of warfare there. Now, it's a tough place to win a war. The Russians found that out in the 80s. Very, very tough. It's basically mountain, rock. It's very hard to find people. much less conduct a war. And we can go into all of these specifics, but you know, I was thinking about this. And do you realize that the at least since the start of the 20th century, that technically we have never really won any war that we haven't declared? We declared World War, we declared war on, Congress declared war in 1917 for World War I. We went in and we won. The next time we declared war was December 1941 for World War II. We went in and we won that one, right? Then we decided not to have Congress declare war in Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And technically, have we won any of those wars? I guess if you don't declare a war, it's not a war. It's just, a skirmish? So when do you know that you've won? No one signed a peace treaty that I know of in North Korea or South Korea, so that war is still going on, is it not? Technically, it's still going on. And the same thing in Iraq. We've never signed a peace treaty with anybody that I know of. And the terrorists are still there, and we're still having skirmishes there. And now we have Afghanistan, and it's the same situation. Vietnam, we lost it. Let's be honest. We exited Vietnam, and we got the last group of people out of there in 1975. We didn't win that war either. So that is a good argument for deciding if you're going to declare war and go over and sacrifice soldiers, declare war. Have Congress declare war. Then we all are on board. And away we go. And go win the war. As Napoleon apparently once said, and he was pretty good at doing it, he said, if you want to take Vienna, take Vienna. Don't do all these other little things. Go do exactly what you set out to do. Everybody knows what you want to do, and do it. So now we're going to have General David Petraeus coming in and taking control of the situation in Afghanistan. And apparently President Obama had to do something with McChrystal and his comments in Rolling Stone, and he has won virtually unanimous praise for making the reshuffling to David Petraeus. But lawmakers and military analysts say they want to see the president heed his own no-tolerance policy and crack the whip on the civilian side when there is division in the ranks, because he's obviously getting a lot of flack, not only from people like McChrystal, but from people that are in the Congress, politicians. And, for instance, McChrystal's diplomatic counterpart in Afghanistan is on record expressing doubt about the strategy itself, the strategy that we are now using in Afghanistan. That does not bode well, does it, for morale and the like? In his Rose Garden remarks, President Obama signaled that he wants everybody on the same page here and get behind him, and that's what he intends to do to enforce that. He says, I welcome debate among my team, but I won't tolerate division. So some people are saying, okay, prove that. Here is the executive director of the Vets for Freedom. His name is Pete Hegseth. He says, there clearly is not unity. He says, McChrystal aired some frustration that a lot of people have been having. He says, Obama handled the McChrystal situation well. And he said, with David Petraeus named to replace McChrystal, Hegseth said that he hopes that the venerable commander will be a powerful advocate for Obama in building trust. So away we go. They've still got the McChrystal plan in Afghanistan in place. So I guess Petraeus will take it over. I guess we'll see what happens. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk with John Studebaker, running for Florida State District 67. So don't go away.
Good day, Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources. June 24, 2010. Gold opened this morning at $1,231.70. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,264.49, $632.25 for a half ounce, or $316.12 for the quarter ounce. That's $1,264.49, $632.25, and $316.12.
Making the right decision is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or worse, depression? Many investors are turning to gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold. Discussing costs, benefits, risks, the book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold can be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, this book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
If I could guarantee every day was sunny, I would.
If I could guarantee even some sleep,
I would.
I would, too. And if you could hire a business with a guarantee, you would. Now you can. Protect yourself with the Super Guarantee from Super Media. Just look in the Verizon Yellow Pages. From plumbers to movers to glass repair, you'll get the job done right, or we'll step in and help to make it right. Best of all, it's free.
While I can't guarantee my cooking, oh! I can protect myself with the Super Guarantee.
Why wouldn't you? Just look for the shield in the only Yellow Pages with a Super Guarantee, the Verizon Yellow Pages, and let the good guys, you know, the ones in the yellow capes, come to the rescue.
On its way now, the new Verizon Yellow Pages with larger, easier-to-read print. Look inside for the Super Guarantee from Super Media. Restrictions apply. See full terms and conditions for this program at superguarantee.com.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Thank you very much for being with us. And we are joined by John Studebaker. John is running for Florida State Representative District 67. That's the area between Gibsonton and Sarasota. So that takes in apparently parts of Pinellas, and I think it's Manatee County. John, welcome to Freedom Works.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
John, you're running as a no-party affiliate candidate. So there is, I guess, you know, you're kind of an independent, but I know that you call yourself a libertarian mainly. I'm curious, why would you not want to run as a libertarian candidate?
Because the main reason I'm running is because the political parties are basically what's wrong with America. As soon as a party gets to power, they are more concerned with continuing the power of the party than in doing anything for the good of America. And even though the libertarians aren't there yet, I do believe that, you know, the old saying of power corrupts absolutely, you know, once any party starts to get power, then they are going to become more and more concerned with keeping that power. And there are some issues that I don't agree with the Libertarian Party on. And it's just like when all these political action committees contact me, I say, you know what, I'm voting this way. I don't care if you give me money. I don't care if I have your support. You know, I have a firm set of beliefs, and that is what I'm running on.
Okay, so why are you running for District 67, and what do you see as the things that you can do for the state of Florida? You know, what What is your candidacy really all about?
Well, my candidacy is all about term limits for Congress. Lots of people, Alex Snitker, who I love, is a big proponent for term limits. But the Senate and the House are never going to pass term limits for themselves. It's never going to happen. People have tried before. There's no way that they can get all those people to say, yes, we agree we are corrupt and we want to put ourselves out of a job. But the states, by Article 5 of the Constitution, the states can call for a constitutional convention to amend the Constitution to place term limits on Congress. Now, there's several states that already have legislation pending to call for a constitutional convention to amend the Constitution for term limits. But it always gets stuck in committee. The parties don't want term limits. I want term limits. I fully believe term limits are going to be the saving grace for America, because it is the only type of campaign finance reform that actually will work. It'll decrease the value of the candidates, so the corporations and the special interest groups stop giving them more money. So I am running for the state house basically just so I can introduce a bill for term limits, and every time I get the microphone, regardless of what the House is talking about, I'm going to be talking about term limits for Congress.
Okay, term limits, though, for the Florida legislature?
Is that what you... Can you repeat that?
Yeah. You're running as a state representative.
Right.
So are you talking about term limits in the Florida state legislature?
Oh, no, we've already got term limits here.
Okay.
No, I want a constitutional convention to place term limits on Congress in Washington.
But you're a state representative. You're not a congressional representative. You know what I mean?
Right, because Article 5 of the Constitution states that the state legislatures have to call for a constitutional convention.
Okay. So you want to get the Florida state legislature to be one of the states to call for it. Got it.
Right.
So do you consider yourself a one-issue candidate then?
I don't consider myself a one-issue candidate, but the way I look at it, I love Bradenton. I've lived in the Bradenton-Sarasota area pretty much all my life. The best thing I can do for the people of Bradenton, the people of Sarasota, the people in Pinellas County, the people of Florida, is to fix the government in Washington. And the best way to do that is at the state level.
Okay. And, John, you're running... again, as a no-party affiliate, how are people finding out about your candidacy, and who are you running against? Who is currently the district representative in 67?
Well, the current representative is Ron Reagan. He's not eligible to run again this year because we do have term limits for the state legislature. There's four Republicans that are running and one Democrat, and I'm basically just trying to get the word out. My candidacy just started about a month and a half ago.
Okay.
A month and a half ago, I was sitting at home, and that is when I had just had everything I could take of the corruption in Washington, and I decided to throw my hat into the ring and run for the state house so I can get term limits passed for Congress.
Fair enough. And what, may I ask, what you've been doing? What is your background? What kind of work have you been doing?
I'm a computer programmer.
Okay.
The big thing that differentiates me from a politician is that I'm an employee. I don't, I'm not a professional fundraiser. I don't own a bunch of businesses. I'm a guy that works 40, 50 hours a week, got his pay cut last year, still trying to make ends meet, and they call representatives for a reason. They're supposed to represent the populace. And the politicians that we have aren't representative of their constituents. And that's one of the big problems and why we're in this mess.
Well, I guess you know, the whole concept of people that go into either a state legislature or Congress is that they are elected there because the people that, you know, back home voted for them, right? Apparently the people back home thought enough of them to send them on their way to Congress or to the state legislature. So how would you say they're not representing their people back home?
Well, they get elected because they raise enough money to buy enough airtime on TV and billboards and newspaper articles, you know. But then once they get to wherever they're going, be it the state or the congressional level, they don't care about the people that got them there. They care about the corporations and the special interest groups that will give them enough money so 2 years from now they'll be able to buy all the advertising and all of the media outlets so they can get reelected.
But John, I mean, let's in the real world, you got to have people know who you are. Therefore, you've got to run ads, and therefore you got to have the money behind you to pay for the advertising and the publicity. Otherwise, people would never know who you are, and that, you know, just be a name on the ballot. Nobody would know who you are.
Well, yeah.
So how are you gonna raise all the money and get yourself known unless you've got groups of people that are willing to support you?
Oh, no, see, that's the key that you just hit on there. You want groups of people to support you. You want, you know, the 912ers, the Tea Parties, the 13 Patriots, the Manatee Patriot Party. You want these groups of people to support you. You don't want some banker supporting you. You don't want some special interest group supporting you.
Wait. These are all special interests. I mean, a bankers association is a special interest group as much as a Tea Partier is. I mean, they're all special interest people. They're all people.
Well, yeah,
Wait. But, you know, I listen to these terms, and you're not the only one, so I don't mean to pick on you.
Oh, no problem.
They're all people. Whether it's a union, or you call it a corporation, a corporation is made up of stockholders. Did you know that? Little old ladies, little old men.
Right.
You know? That's what they are. All of these organizations are people. So you say big corporations, that seems to be a bad thing. But the Tea Partiers or the union people or whatever, you know, I mean, they're all people and they're all groups. And this is free speech issue. I mean,
Okay. No. No, I'm not saying that we shouldn't allow corporations to take out ads for people. I mean, when Obama was criticizing the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court said, "Yeah, corporations, you have a right to, you know, advocate for someone." No, that's corporations should have that. The problem is the system that it runs through, where when you're dealing with these small groups, then you've got people that are actually believe in you and want to help you. Where when you're dealing with these big groups, unions, banks, corporations, and again, you know, I own stock in corporations, not very much, you know, but I don't get involved in the politics and where they spend their money. That's the big difference. You talk about the individual stockholder. There's a difference between someone that owns a couple of dozen shares of a company and someone that is willing to get out there with a sign and say, "Vote for this guy."
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, this is the thing. When I hear this, it just almost makes my blood boil. Corporations are going to invest and lobby for people that meet the interests of their corporation. And their corporation is made up of all of these stockholders, the little old ladies, the little old men, everybody. All right?
Right.
Okay. So that's how it works. That's free speech. So they have as much right as anybody else, any other organization or group, you know, to get behind somebody. And that's the American way. I mean, that's a freedom of speech issue.
Right. So, I said they have the right to support and to take out billboards and to do whatever they want to try to get the person they want elected.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is with the corruption of the politicians themselves that say, okay, I've got these 4,000 people that voted for me that want one thing, but then I've got this union's corporate interest, whatever, that wants to give me $10,000 if I do what they want instead of the people.
But they're all part of the people, and the guy makes a decision on a particular bill, and then he goes home to either get reelected or not elected based on the history of what he's done while in office. The people that are going to vote, if they don't like what he did and they think he voted against what they believed in, they're not going to vote for him.
Yeah, that would be great if that's the way the system worked. That's the way the system should work, but that's not the way the system works.
What do you mean?
Whoever has the most money wins.
No, it's not.
Yes, yes.
Well, there's people that are in office all the time, and they're not in there because they got the most money. They got the most votes.
Well, there's plenty of examples of people that should never be in office that got there because they spent a couple of million dollars on advertising.
Of course, there are people that, again, but where do they get that money? You know, they get the money from people that believe in them and back them. Organizations that believe in them and back them give them money. That's their freedom of speech issue. Okay, anyway,
if a corporation wants to support someone, they should do it directly and not give it through the back rooms to the politicians.
Well, it's not being given. Yeah, but there are laws in place that do not allow that. And there's an open window. You know, you also have to publicly state who you are. Anyway, I tell you what, that's an interesting issue, and I certainly understand what you're trying to say there. And term limits seem to be your big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with term limits personally. You know, I think it is something that should be considered in Congress. They have term limits for the president. Why not for people in Congress? That's a fair statement. Again, we're talking with John Studebaker. He is running as an NPA candidate, no party affiliation candidate, for Florida State Congressional District 67, which includes parts of southern Pinellas County and all the way down to, I guess, where, the Sarasota area, John?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It goes about halfway through Sarasota.
Okay, good. Are there any other issues that are big for you, whether it's state issues or national issues that you will be pushing?
Well, I know I just got done saying I'm not a one-issue candidate. I mean, the term limits is what I'm running on. I mean, that is what I believe in. Other issues... I know, like, the Defense of Marriage Act is still, you know, big.
Mm-hmm.
That got passed a couple of years ago.
Sure.
I think marriage is a religious term. The government has no business saying whether marriage is between a man, a woman, or anything.
Fair enough.
Now, they should be absolutely equal, you know, so far as the government's concerned. Two men are the same as two women, as the same as a man and a woman, as the same as...
Well, you know, I have an interesting theory about that. Do you mind my telling it to you and see how you respond?
No, please do.
All right. I always felt that the institution of marriage, a man and a woman, the whole purpose of it was to raise a family of children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was the reason that a man and a woman, quite frankly, got together and married, raised a family. And there seems to be a lot of people that believe that an integral part of a culture is the family, if not the basic building block of a culture, is a family.
Right.
You know what I mean? A man and a woman, husband, wife, whatever you want to call it, and their children.
Right. The
okay.
Traditional nuclear family.
That's the traditional family. Now, if you want to sanction a marriage, and I'm not talking about allowing people, you know, as many people that want to have, you know, the right, I think they have a right, people have a right, as libertarian people have a right to cohabitate with whoever they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's nobody's business. But when you take the term marriage and then say it doesn't have to be between one man and one woman, I think you're going to find a slippery slope after that. And here's why I think that. You suggest that two guys or two girls should be able to be married if they would like to, and have that that institution sanctioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I say to you, why does it have to be two guys? Why can't it be three, or two guys and one girl? I mean, what is so special then, if it's not between one man and one woman, what is so special about the number two? Why does it have to be only two?
Well, it doesn't.
Oh, okay.
If people decide they want to get together and all
get
live
married.
Together.
No, but get married. So we can sanction five people getting married, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. How about 10?
Again, marriage is a religious term.
Yeah.
The government.
So, but the government does get involved in marriage because benefits and all kinds of other things are applied to a legally married group of people, right?
Right.
Okay. So therefore, if we sanction marriage for any number of people, and, you know, seven people, you know, seven men, two women, and a mule, whatever, you know, whatever you want. No, I'm serious now. You see where the slippery slope is here? And I think that that's why a good case can be made that at least the institution of marriage as a recognizable institution may need to stay between just one man and one woman.
Well, see, I think the issue there isn't that marriage needs to be between a man and a woman. It's that the government basically needs to get out of our lives. But more so than that, you know, you're talking about, you know, how insurance and, you know, certain rights are or benefits are extended to the partner of a person. All right. If they decide they've got
six partners.
That doesn't mean that, you know, it needs to include all seven partners. You know, they can limit it and say, okay, you know, it's one partner.
But you see, the whole
more than likely, going back again to the insurance, which is the big issue. You know, if I've got myself on insurance, then it's one price. If I take my wife and put her on insurance, then my price goes up. If I take some other guy, put him on insurance, it goes up again, it goes up again, again, again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what you're saying is just keep the government out of any of it. And marriage is a religious thing, and let them worry about it. And, you know, there's an argument that could be made for it. I would just suggest to you that if we're even going to use the term marriage, that we have to be very careful about just allowing anybody through the gate here. Otherwise, the whole foundation or building block of a culture will fall apart. And that's just, to me, it's just common sense. That's all.
Right. Well, no. I mean, my issue is that the government is using the word marriage to begin with. It's a religious term. It, you know, so far as the government's concerned, it should be, you know, a civil union. You know, yes, we should encourage the traditional family, because, you know, that's what makes America go.
That's what makes any. That's what.
Saying, oh, okay. You don't fit our definition. So, you know, therefore.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for coming on. I think you're an interesting person. I wish you the very best in your race, John. And people would like to. If people would like to find out more about what you're all about, do you have a website you can mention?
Yeah, they can go to Vote Studebaker. That's just like the car, StudeBaker.com.
Okay, VoteStudebaker.com. Well, John Studebaker, the best to you. Good luck. Thank you very much for being with us.
I appreciate it, Paul.
All right, John. Bye for now. John Studebaker, my friends. Very interesting. Okay, we're going to take a short break. Got lots more to talk about on FreedomWorks. Don't go away.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. The Rays on the radio.
This is
is the Rays Report with Rich Herrera.
Game two of the three-game set with the San Diego Padres. The Rays fell behind 3-0. They come storming back, tied up on this Sean Rodriguez home run.
Swing and a fly ball center field and deep. Back at it goes Gwynn. Back to the track. Threat. It's there. Sean Rodriguez tucks it over the center field wall.
The Rays battle to tie it up at 3 after 6 innings, but the Padres will pull ahead and pick up the extra insurance run they need with Chase Headley's home run in the ninth.
Swing and a drive toward that bobblehead. Deep to right field. Zobrist going back. At the wall, looks up, and it's gone.
Padres go on to win 5-4. Quick turnaround, Rays taking on the Padres. Game 3 comes up, Garza versus LeBlanc. 11:30 is our pregame, 12:10 first pitch.
Catch the Rays all season long on the Rays Radio Network. For tickets, log on to RaysBaseball.com.
Rays Baseball on WDCF 1350.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Let's face it, life doesn't take days off. And now, neither do we. Introducing 7-day service at all 12 AutoWay Tire and Service Centers. Now, you can get your vehicle serviced by factory-trained technicians 7 days a week. It doesn't matter what you drive. The AutoWay Tire and Service Centers are equipped to service and repair virtually every make and model. Plus, AutoWay guarantees the lowest service prices. And right now, we're celebrating our new 7-day schedule by offering 7 service items under $20. That includes oil changes, tire rotations, wiper blades, and more, each for under $20. So whether you need service Monday through Friday or Saturday and Sunday,
who are you going to call? AutoWay!
Get 7-day service at all 12 AutoWay Tire and Service Centers. Plus, for a limited time, 7 service items for under $20. For locations or to schedule your next appointment, visit AutoWayService.com. That's AutoWayService.com.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. I am Paul Molloy. Thank you very much for joining with us on this Thursday morning. And gosh, Al Gore is getting into a lot of trouble. Or at least there's a lot of bad publicity. The poor guy announced that he is breaking up with Tipper Gore after all of those years. And of course, the first thing you think about is there another person involved with one of them? And apparently, there is an Oregon woman who claims that she was basically fondled and groped by the former vice president during a massage session. And she said the former vice president, she described him as a giggling, crazed sex poodle who gave a come-hither look before pouncing on her in a Portland hotel suite. And this is a 54-year-old woman. She made these claims back in January of 2009 in an interview with police. She's a licensed masseuse. And so I suppose they, you know, this is the kind of thing that came out that maybe this is the cause of the breakup, or maybe it's one of the things. But as I say, the Al Gore is not getting, I guess, right now the best of publicity. Well, in the meantime, with the current administration, there are now 8 Republican senators and an independent group that supports tighter limits on immigration. They are warning that the Obama administration is now drafting a plan that will issue a blanket amnesty for millions of illegal immigrants. A blanket amnesty. And the senators who wrote, the 8 Republican senators who wrote the White House earlier this week, say they are concerned that the administration is readying a plan B in case the comprehensive immigration reform bill cannot win enough support to clear Congress. Now, that would be, I would think, a little scary if they just unilaterally issued blanket amnesty. That might be tough. Anyway, in their letters, these senators urged the president to abandon what they say is this move to extend either deferred action or parole to millions of illegal aliens. The senators include Chuck Grassley of Iowa, Orrin Hatch of Utah, David Vitter of Louisiana, Jim Bunning of Kentucky, Saxby Chambliss of Georgia, Johnny Isaacson, also of Georgia, James Inhofe of Oklahoma, and Thad Cochran of Mississippi. They're all Republicans. Now, the White House has not responded after a request to comment on all of this, which you would think if they do not plan on giving a blanket amnesty, would they not come out and say, we would never consider doing that? I mean, if eight senators are urging them not to do it, and they're not commenting at this point, to me, that is sort of scary, because we're not getting in, you know, what's going on? Would Obama try to do that? Well, I think it would be, I don't think it would be a very good situation. I think it would be the unintended consequences of doing something like that would be frightening. In the meantime, Arizona wants the federal government to close the borders. And since they are not doing so, Arizona then passes their own illegal immigration law that says we are not going to allow people that are illegal immigrants to keep pouring in, and we will stop people that have been accused or are possibly involved in some other thing that the police would stop them on. We're going to ask them. So there you go. Meantime, a new poll is out. I guess all of these polls, one after another, and they're not boding very well for Barack Obama. This is an NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, and for the first time in the survey, more people disapprove of Obama's job performance than approve. More than 60% believe the country is on the wrong track. And so the numbers have just taken another nosedive. In fact, this is the lowest point that Obama has been in the favorability rating. It's now at 47%. Excuse me, it's now at 40%. 40%. It was at 47 in their earlier poll. It's now 7 percentage points lower. It's down to 40%. Excuse me. I'm misreading that. Let me start again. Obama's favorable and unfavorable rating is now at 47%. And you know what? They misread this sentence because it doesn't make sense. It says it's the rating is now at 47% to 40%, down from 49% to 38% in early May. Okay, so it's dropped to 40%. That's, I guess, what they're still saying. Now, 54% give him high marks for being able to handle a crisis at one point. That is now down to 40%. In July 2009, 57% gave him high marks for being decisive. It's now at 44%. In July 2009, 61% gave him high marks for strong leadership. That's now at 49%. So he's down into the 40s, I guess. That's what they are saying about him. A silver lining for him, his personal score is still strong. People like him. He's got a 64% likability rating. And 51% give him high marks for being compassionate. And 72% say he's very tall. So those are important.
I think he's a prime candidate for a daytime talk show.
Yeah, he's got all of them. He would do well on a quiz show or a talk show, a late night program.
I mean, he's a damn good reader. I mean,
he He reads a teleprompter with the best. I think Reagan and he probably are the two best teleprompter readers. Yeah.
Be hard to choose who is actually better.
Yeah. I think the thing that Reagan might win on is that he could also not only read the teleprompter, but he could emote some expression as he read the teleprompter. But that came from his acting days.
Yeah.
In front of a camera, he knew how to emote, right? I don't know that Obama can emote as well as Reagan could. I mean, Reagan looked like he was very sincere when he was standing up there reading his teleprompter, I always thought. And I'm not sure. With Obama, he reads it very well, but his expression doesn't seem to change very much. Where's the emoting? Yeah. Come on, Lee. We got to emote when we talk. Look at me. I'm emoting. Emoting all over the room.
What? How many seconds of dead air was that?
That was about 12. Then you were supposed to say something.
It was about 4. I had all kinds of things I was going to say. I totally lost it. Hey, Nancy. Nancy, can I look at that script again? I don't know. This is what? Call my agent.
Nancy Reagan and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, Nancy Reagan. It's supposed to be Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, however he did it, he got his message across, and people responded positively to Reagan, and they seemed to respond positively to Barack Obama as well.
Reagan was a sportscaster.
Yes, he was.
Probably knew that.
I did. You're right. In fact, I'll tell you the right.
Well-rounded communicator.
He came out of Iowa. He was born in Western Illinois, and he came, just across the border. He went to Iowa, and he went to Des Moines, and he became a sportscaster at WHO Radio, where he was doing that in the very early 30s as a sportscaster. You know that they used to back then, they would, simulate baseball games that were going on. And he would do the cup. Really?
Little crack the bat sound
they
and
did.
A cheer sound.
They did.
And,
they did. They would have a ball and a bat, and they would. They would make noises, sound effects. And they would be reading the play-by-play off the wire, off the teletype. You're laughing, but that's exactly what they did. And they had crowd noises, they had sound effects and everything else. And Ronald Reagan did that on the air. Isn't that something?
Well, that's pretty much says it all right there.
Yeah, it does. So he really, then he went out.
Pulling off a gig like that, putting one over on the American people being. Nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already,
exactly.
Well-trained.
The way he went to Hollywood and did all the movies, then he became the governor. And look, you got to be a good actor to be the governor or the president of the United States somewhere along the way.
Was I the only one in America who said, why would anybody even consider having a president who's a former actor? Am I the only one who's questioning this or...
Well, yeah, everybody questioned it, I think, when he was one of the first actors to become a governor, too, right? If not the first. I can't think of any other governor before Reagan. No, I'm wrong. George Murphy. George Murphy was an actor, and he became the governor of California before Ronald Reagan did.
Huh.
But California, you would understand that an actor might get high in a... So they've had like three actors because Arnold...
A lot of actors get high, from what I understand.
But Arnold Schwarzenegger is the third, right? Governor of Florida, California, that's... I don't know how good an actor he was, but he showed up there and made movies.
He's a terrible actor.
I know.
Really, wasn't it?
But
I can't watch that guy
He speaks,
at all.
But he emotes and reads teleprompters very well.
Just got to work on the dialect there.
Well, by the way, here's on the sales of new homes. Bad news again, and homes in May sank 33% to the lowest level on record. A very bleak report that came out of the Commerce Department yesterday. And if the home sales are not working well, just think it's sort of a domino effect. All these other things don't work well. Analysts say the sudden drop in new home sales, 33%, they link that to the expiration of federal tax credits of up to $8,000 that are no longer there. But double-digit unemployment and slow job growth have also weighed in on the market, even with mortgage rates at historically low levels. But that's a very scary scenario. I guess a lot of homes are still sitting out there. If you're a buyer, this is maybe the best time ever to look for a home. Very low interest rates, and people that are trying to get rid of their homes and are, quite frankly, have to resort to dropping the price way, way down. I guess overall it's not a good thing, but if you're a buyer, it is a good thing. Maybe if you got a little money, this is the time to buy some property. Anyway, we still have a few minutes, so I want to talk about Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan. And by the way, we're going to talk about Elena Kagan with one of our buddies who specializes in Supreme Court on Monday, whether or not Elena Kagan indeed would be a good candidate. But here is, remember Robert Bork? He tried to become a Supreme Court justice and did not. But he does weigh in on whether or not Elena Kagan would be a good choice. Basically, he says that she is an immature and inexperienced candidate. So apparently he's not for her. But he has joined a pro-life group called Americans United for Life. He was on a conference call to discuss Elena Kagan's confirmation hearings. By the way, they start Monday. So we're going to be having the talk about Elena Kagan Monday. It'll be working right at the same time these hearings open up. But Bork says that Ms. Kagan has not had time to develop a mature philosophy of judging. And he added that Kagan's tenure in academia did not offer her the experience necessary to serve on the court. He says the academic world is not a place in which you learn prudence and caution and other virtues of a judge. And she has not had experience anywhere else that I know of. Now, of course, Bork worked in academia for a long time before he became, in fact, both of them worked in academia before both of them became a solicitor general. Bork went on to serve on the U.S. Court of Appeals for 5 years. But he believes Kagan's nomination was rooted in Obama's desire to make history with the nomination for an additional woman to serve on the high court. He says, for some reason, presidents get all excited for having firsts, and this would be the first court with three women on it. Now, I made a mistake. I said that Bork was under the Nixon administration. No, he was nominated by Ronald Reagan in 87, but he was rejected. And now the term borked has become a verb, has it not? If you get borked, that means you're not going to make it to the Supreme Court.
Oh, that's what it means.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, bork is now a verb. It's like the word Clinton became Clintonian and an adjective.
Or like
he has done something of Clintonian capability, right?
Yeah, or I got Malloyed, for example.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a horrible thing.
Hey, if Elena Kagan got married to a guy, would that be considered a same-sex marriage, or would that, no? I don't know.
I'm not going to go there at all. In fact, how much time do we have? I don't think we got too much time left.
30 seconds.
30 seconds to say thank you, everybody, for listening to Freedom Works this morning. I hope you have a wonderful Thursday. We'll join you again tomorrow, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Bye for now.
I know so many people who think they can do it alone.